Another weekend of Premier League football, another weekend VAR disaster class. Genuinely, right? At what point are we going to ask the question and say, shall we just get rid of it? Lads, it is VAR.
Yep, get rid of it.
Disaster.
Disaster. In other news, massive win for Newcastle. Luton almost got a famous home win. Man City just absolutely steamrolling it. And Erik ten Hag, your job is safe for at least another week, maybe two.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Boys, welcome to the show. Mark, Watto, lovely to see you as usual. Happy Monday morning. We've got to start with Newcastle against Arsenal. It was an okay game. It was a decent game, but it was overshadowed yet again by VAR, weren't it, Mark?
It was. I mean, the thing I find incredible is that we had this a few weeks ago with Liverpool and we had Jurgen Klopp come out and say it was disgusting. You've had a manager like Arteta come out and say it's disgusting and an Arsenal statement. And then a pile-on from Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Michael Owen, everybody else saying, why is he complaining? And I'm like, who does a show with Howard Webb, Michael Owen? And I'm just like, what annoys me the most is that the people, I mean, Neville said it, Carragher said it, someone else said it this morning on the radio. It's definitely not a foul by Gabriel. So I don't know why people are moaning. Well, it's not definitely not a foul, is it? I think it definitely is a foul, but I'm not so arrogant as to tell people it's definitely not a foul. I just think it's disgusting. And I think that the way that they've handled it across the whole weekend, because there's more than that, is a joke. And I think VAR is ruining football. Like, what's the point in it?
All right, well, so I want to talk about the goal then, okay? So let's break it down bit by bit, step by step, all right? The first part of the VAR was the ball being out or not, okay? And it's not fully clear, is it?
Well, for me, you can't tell. So.
No.
That's the reality. They've got so many cameras in these stadiums now, you'd expect it to be a black and white decision.
They've got so many cameras in the stadium, but they haven't got one right down the line.
Which is crazy, because you've got the goal line technology in the frame of the goal. It would be easy to have a camera level with the goal line for the ball going out, I would suggest.
So we're not sure if the ball went out or not.
Do you think it went out?
Probably not.
You know, on the live view, without any replays, when he's chasing the ball into the corner, I thought he left it a little bit before he got it.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, that's out.
Yeah.
Without any replays, I just saw it in the top corner, went, that looks out to me.
Uh-huh. So, but either way, you can't... We haven't got enough technology or enough of a view to see if it's out or not. So you can't go giving it as out, okay? Yeah.
Well, you can. Because they did it with Rashford against Brighton.
They did do that against Rashford and Brighton.
So you can do it, and this is the problem.
So this is the whole problem with VAR, and this is my big problem with VAR, and we'll come back to this anyway. So that first one, so pass that now, okay then, yeah? So the ball into the box, all right? First of all, talk to me about Raya's positioning for this.
Yeah, mate. We keep having the debate about what Arteta's done with the two goalies. I think he's created a massive problem. For me, even the shot that actually goes out where we're talking about whether the ball's in or out of play, he's 2 yards beyond the post when the ball's driven across him. So then he's got to travel further across the goal when the ball's picked up. As he steps inside, you have to be adjusting the position because the vulnerable part of the goal is towards the back for a cross or a shot.
Yeah.
And you've got to be able to cover both bases and try and protect your back four when you're playing goal. That's the whole part that you can deal with crosses. You've got the spring, you can use your hands and try and protect. In the end, it's a flipped ball in, he's in a poor position, and then we get to the next point. Is it a foul by Joe Linton because he has two hands on Gabriel?
Yeah.
My honest take is, I think Gabriel's under the ball and he's going down.
Yeah.
But the reality is, when you stop it, and if I'm at Stockley Park looking at VAR, Joe Linton's got two hands on him.
Yeah.
And you're saying at that point, he's stopping me jumping.
Yeah.
So I think at that point, in all the things we talk about VAR, that has to be a foul.
If you look at it, there's a good still, and you know, I'll bow down to the greater knowledge with the goalkeepers, but as the ball goes over Raya, there's a still where he's got his hands.
Yeah.
The ball's not even at Gabriel yet, and he's on his back.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, last week we saw a dodgy penalty in the Manchester derby where there's barely any contact, yeah, that's been given. If you've got to look at that and go, I mean, the only way you can't give it is if people, is if players are wearing these body, you know, shirts that say the impact's not enough to go down.
How
you,
much
you are
pressure?
You are guessing. So surely you've got to go with a foul.
I disagree, lads. I don't think it's a foul. I really don't think it's a foul. I think I agree with the first part of what you said. I think Gabriel is caught under the ball, and the only way he can get out of this and try and escape a goal going in the back of the net is if he purposely goes down and makes it look. So I feel like he's almost trying to buy a foul and he's falling down, and I don't think there's enough pressure or enough of a push from Joe Linton. I just think Gabriel's thinking, oh no, I've been done. Big Joe Linton's on my back. The only way I can get out of this is make it look like it's a foul. So he's gone down. That's my interpretation. But this is the whole problem with VAR. Whether Anthony Gordon's offside or not is by the by. Like, forget that one But this is my whole problem with VAR, right? The whole point of it is that it's so subjective and it's so opinion-based on what you think. We've just had a disagreement there. Do you know what I mean? And that's cool because everybody can have a disagreement. But I think if it's left just to the referee on field to look at it with his own eyes and see and see and see, and then the goal goes in and he says, yeah, it's a goal, it's fine, everybody will go, cool, I will understand that. I can see why you've given it. Not a problem. Let's just play on. Not only that, you won't have to wait 4 minutes for them to go through every single cutscene, take the joy out of the goal, the celebrating, all that kind of stuff. If the referee signals a goal straight away, it's a goal. Everybody moves and plays on.
You make a great point because ultimately the referee on the pitch gave the goal.
Yeah.
And if there's no VAR, I'm not moaning.
No.
Watto's not moaning.
No.
You go. We're probably saying they might have got away with one, but we don't know about VAR.
Exactly.
The problem with the VAR is, and your view is very subjective, that you don't think it's enough of a foul. I think that works on field. Yes. I think as soon as you've got VAR, you go, oh, that ball might be out. Oh, that looks like a foul.
Yeah.
I've got to not give this goal. There's two really big...
That's why I'm surprised.
There's two really big things there. There's a get out of jail, isn't there?
Yeah, but that's why I'm surprised it's a goal. Because I think there's the potential that the ball's out, for sure. We're not quite sure. But when you stop and put the still on, when we've seen potential tackles for red cards, grabbing people, and it looks horrendous, I thought when they saw that, I thought they'd have to stop it and give a foul. In normal football, 20 years ago, if the ref doesn't give it,
we just
crack on.
We just carry on.
I don't mind you saying it's not a foul. I don't mind Gary Neville saying it's not a foul. What I do mind is it's definitely not a foul. Yeah. It's not definitely not a foul because if it looks like a foul, it's a foul in the minds of people who think it is a foul.
Yeah, sure.
And the referee on the pitch not giving it's fine. But VAR should give it. They've got all the angles, all the slow-mos.
This is where now I think why VAR is getting so dragged into the mud, because so many decisions now are so subjective and so opinion-based. And I might think it's a foul, you might not think it's a foul. But the fact that VAR highlights it and then somebody somewhere is making a decision, not only is there a trust element in it where you just think, oh, well, he refereed against Aaron, he gave it for them last time and he's not giving it. That's the bit that worries me. So I just think, why don't you just let the referee make the decision on field there and then with the subjective ones and then the black and white ones that can only be fact, the offside ones, where even the offside ones, they're getting wrong at sometimes. But only the black and white ones, goal line technology, for example, they don't get that wrong. Do you know what I mean? Leave that to VAR and the rest, just let the referee. Simple as that.
Well, it'd make the game easier because at the minute it's becoming very frustrating for people in the stadiums, for people watching the game at home. You just don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's too long to get to the conclusion.
Let's talk about the Kai Havertz one. Is that a red card? There you go. Subjective 100%. One. Is it a red card?
It's a red card all day, any day.
Yes.
100%. He's out of control. It's a red card. He's out of control.
But
he's only not broken his leg through luck.
If VAR cannot give that as a red card, we might as well scrap it.
Exactly.
Because it's finished. That is the clearest red card that you'll see all season.
It's horrific. I mean,
it's a horrific tackle.
If Xhaka does that last year, he's gone.
It's a red card.
Yeah, I think it's reputational. I don't know. And the Bruno Guimaraes one is a red card. Like, he literally sees Jorginho, lifts his hand up and goes like that. I mean, if it's not, what do they call it? Violent conduct?
Yeah.
It's a red card.
It's like me running down the street and just going, never mind, unlucky.
What are they going in VAR? Oh, he's not hit him hard enough. To be fair, he's not hit him hard enough. I've been it like that before. It's not too
but
bad.
But, like, you always respond to players, don't you? Havertz got three Newcastle players booked.
Yeah.
You saw the Newcastle bench. And Arteta, for all he moans about VAR, you know what it's like. You're in goal, you're watching your teammate flying the tackle like that. It's like, you're off,
wow, mate. You're off. What are you doing?
Newcastle players respond to protect their own player. They end up with three yellow cards. The Arsenal bench, like, they're just thinking, we're in big bother here. And all of a sudden, nothing happens. It's VAR is not getting used in any way, shape or form how I believe they thought it were going to get used.
If I was Arteta, I think he missed the trick after the game, because I would have gone, I've lost the game anyway. I would have said, look, that's a disgraceful decision. It's definitely a foul. They should have sent Havertz off as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have gone, look, he should have sent Havertz off. He should have sent Gamero's off. They're rubbish, you know.
The managers have to start just saying, we don't want this anymore. Yeah. Because every footballer I've spoken to, I mean this properly, every single footballer I've played with in the Premier League, every footballer I've done podcasts with and spoke to, everybody I know says they hate it. They hate VAR. They want it gone. And I think even the fans are starting to come around to it now because they know that they can't celebrate a goal on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, I'm sure Newcastle fans love it. And I'm sure they'll be in the comments saying they love it. But I don't think you did love it.
No.
Because you had a massive goal in a massive game. Yeah. You had to wait 3 minutes for it.
It's pathetic.
And actually, it would have been given anyway by the on-field ref, and you'd have loved it a lot more. And that's the sad thing.
All right, I don't want to talk about VAR anymore for this segment anyway. We'll probably talk about it later because guaranteed there were some more VAR mistakes made elsewhere in the Premier League this weekend. I want to talk about, Watto, if you can, I want to talk about Arsenal's frontline, OK? So Eddie Nketiah, I think everybody now has got to the point where they realise he's probably not the solution. Fantastic hat-trick last week against Sheffield United, but I think this is their problem, Arsenal, is... Yeah, sure, he's going to do that against the Sheffield United, but when the opponent is stepped up a bit more quality, they need more quality in that position. Ivan Toney has been linked with Arsenal. Massive move. They're talking 60 million, 80 million, even 100 million. Do you reckon he could be the answer?
I agree with you. I think it's very easy. It's not easy in the Premier League, and Sheffield United are a Premier League team for sure. But it's easier against the lower-ranked teams. You've got so much going on, especially when you're playing at home. When the big games come and the moments are there, you need a proper centre-forward. Yeah. I think Toney has done remarkable stuff at Brentford, if I'm honest with you. And I like the way that Brentford utilise him. The argument will come, he's going to play for Arsenal. Are they going to demand slightly a different approach from their own centre-forward? But unless they get a centre-forward who plays as a centre-forward, where he can link with the two wide players and be a real caveat up the front of the team... I think they're going to struggle. They didn't look like they were going to score a goal at Newcastle.
They didn't, did they?
No, and look, it's the first loss of the season for them. And Newcastle away is a real tough, tough place to go. And they've got a lot of things going in their favour at the minute. But if you're not playing with a recognised centre-forward who's at the level to cause problems for that Newcastle back four, then you're not going to win the league.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I agree. I think... I've said it about Nketiah a few times. He's a flat track bully, really. You know, he'll get your goals against lesser teams, but in the big games, I've seen Arsenal a few times, and he's not a defender. And let's not forget, they haven't got Bottom in Newcastle. Mm. It's Lascelles and Shaw, so they are slightly vulnerable. And they defended. I thought both defences played very, very well.
Yeah,
they were the strong points of the game, and I thought Declan Rice had a good game. But going forward, it's Saka or nothing, isn't it, for Arsenal?
Are we paying 60 mil for Toney?
Yeah. Got a good goal record, hasn't he?
A lot of penalties.
You get more at Arsenal.
I think he'll do wonderful at Arsenal. I do.
I think he'd do really well. And in the modern market, if you're getting him for 50 or 60 mil, I would say that's potentially a snip.
I mean, I'd want better if they've got any more money. I mean, look, if you look at Man City, they've got Haaland. If there's something better out there, I'd go for it. But if that's their budget, yeah, good signing.
All right, let's talk about Aston Villa. Watto, we're going to start with a little bit of Emi Martinez talk, if you please, can my friend. Fresh off the back of winning the Lev Yashin Award for best goalkeeper in the world, they go and lose 2-0 to Nottingham Forest, and he has a bit of a stinker as well, doesn't he, with one of the goals?
I think that's plain in goal, isn't it? He would have been on Monday evening feeling on top of the world, and obviously he's a confident guy. He always exudes that with his back four. And the way he plays, obviously, Forest start the game, house on fire. They start the games really quick. Another quick goal in the opening 5 minutes that's nothing to do with him. But they actually survive that period and come in 1-0 at half-time. And then you think Emery will get into them. Tactically, he'll be a little bit astute. He'll have seen where they're vulnerable. Start the second half. Right, guys, here we go. And a shot from 20 yards... that he would save 99 out of 100. He gets a big top hand on it. I actually think he probably goes beyond the ball.
Yeah, is that what he's done wrong? Is that, so break it down for me. Is this Is this the problem with this and how this goal has gone in? Has he got too much of a hand on it?
He's got too much on it. I think he sees it late and that's why he comes with a top hand, because he's got his own bodies in the way. And as he comes across, normally the top hand would fly it over the bar or really out towards the byline for a throw-in. Yeah. But he's gone too far beyond it and it just catches the inside of the hand here.
That little soft pad there.
And to be fair to him, he's up quick and whatever. But because it's caught the only part of his hand where we're going to go back into the goal, to be honest with you, and it's flown in. And, you know, from that point on, it's a mountain to climb.
That's the problem, by the way, with going with a top hand as well, is if you're going... So if you're diving to your right and you're going with your lead hand, you know exactly where that lead hand is, don't you? You know exactly what part of the ball you're about to touch and you've got so much more feeling. As soon as you start bringing this hand over and... That is just all over the shop, honestly. You'll be able to get your hand on the ball, but you won't be able to know exactly where you're getting the hand on the ball.
There's two bits. You haven't got the control.
Yeah.
But then also, you see it late, but your hand's coming across your face.
Yeah.
Where when you go in with your leading hand, you've got all this...
You're watching. You're watching the ball all the way.
And normally that's why from distance you want to go with two. So if the ball has a little wobble, you can adjust a little bit. But when you fly that top hand up and the ball may well have wobbled and it comes back in this way, at that point you're just wanting a stop.
Yeah.
And hopefully it comes into this area here where you can pick it up. But because he's shot across and the ball's wobbled and it comes off the only soft bit here and it's so fine line, that detail to stop that ball.
Look at it. This is world-class goalkeeping talk, this is. Analysis. This is.
But he'll be devastated because any goalie don't like getting beat from outside the box.
Oh, God, no.
And somebody who's just had the award, the Yashin Award, I think not for a guy who's won the World Cup, it don't put more pressure on. But obviously we're highlighting that today. But he would feel as though he's stopped his team getting a result because at 2-0 the steam's gone out of it.
Yeah, he'll know. He'll be absolutely gutted. And I still think he is probably one of the best goalkeepers in the world at this moment in time. So I know he'll be absolutely fine.
They all make
fine.
Mistakes. Yeah, what do you think about the Forest goalkeeper? Because I've got him in my FPL, Matt Turner. I didn't pick him this week. He's been doing well. But out the team for the former Benfica goalkeeper I can't pronounce.
I'll tell you his name. His name is Odysseus. Vlachodimos.
What do you think the impact of that is then? Reason for it?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. Obviously, they had a bad result, didn't they, last week? Matt Turner didn't cover himself in glory. And I think sometimes managers, it's the easiest decision to make. It's the easiest option. It's the, instead of maybe swapping a defender that won't really send a message or won't really get recognised, if you're changing the goalkeeper, everybody looks at that, don't they?
Well, they did it at Leeds, didn't they, with Meslier?
Exactly, with Meslier. Everybody looks at that and go, ooh, that's a big call. That is a big, big call.
I always found it really tough in my position as a goalie coach when a manager behind the scenes started talking about the goalie.
Yeah.
And I go into self-protection mode for the goalie and a little bit for yourself as the coach as well, because ultimately it's a trust thing that you're working with the goalie. And when you start hearing coaches or managers talking in the office, do we do this, should we do that, it's always a danger signal. And my response was always, can we back this guy? Can we do more in training to build him for the team, the confidence? But if it came to the ultimate crunch of we're changing, I said, if we change, get it in your head now, it's 10 games.
Yeah.
We're not going to go, if whoever we put in makes a mistake in any of these first 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we're saying it's 10 games.
We've got to back him.
Because if we don't back him, the other guy is not coming back in with any confidence. This guy thinks it's just a one shot in the dark. It's a massive decision. And we said it last year on this. When the teams start changing the goalie, it is last chance saloon.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think Forest, because of the three teams that have got promoted, are not going to be anywhere near the relegation trouble. But it's not a good thing when you start changing the goalie after 10 games.
This is the problem with chopping and changing the goalie. Everybody spoke about the Raya Ramsdale situation. It's a problem, mate. It is. It's a problem that...
But did you see Ramsdale in the cup midweek, made some right clangers.
He's not, his head's all over the place, so it will be. That's understandable as well, isn't it? When you're the first choice goalie and you know you're the first choice goalie, you know you've got the managers back in, the players back in, the goalie coaches back in, you can go onto that pitch and not have to worry about all that stuff. You just play your best football. It'll be the same with this situation here at the weekend for Nottingham Forest. The new guys come in. He didn't have the busiest of games.
Forest defending
was incredible because Villa had a lot of the ball, a lot of chances, a lot of balls into the box. They defended it absolutely fantastic. But for a game to come straight into and win 2-0 clean sheet at home, it's a fantastic start for him, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. But the amount of times I had as a goalie coach, when obviously the goalies in the team would never know the fights that you have behind the scenes to make sure managers don't make rash decisions by listening to other coaches, because it's easy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what your job as a goalie coach is. Look, you believe that you've got the right man in between the sticks for sure, but you've got to fight and fight for your guy. And ultimately the manager makes the final decision, but there has to be a big picture on the final decision.
World-class talk. I love this. I could do this all the day, lads. We're going to talk about Man United. Mark, I feel they got away with one at the weekend, you know. I do. I feel they got away with one at the weekend. Even you, and don't you lie, because I've seen your stream, all right? And I saw when Bruno had that ball and he was jinking, he was doing this. And even you were saying, don't shoot, don't shoot. And he goes and gets one off, and fair play to him. It was a good finish. We'll talk about the goalkeeper in a minute, because I guarantee you Bert Leno will be absolutely gutted with this goal going in the back of the net. But just talk about Man United on Saturday morning.
I think it was exactly what Manchester United needed to do. They've had a really hard week. The press have been all over him to sack him, which I think is incredible. He's now the quickest manager in our history to get to 50 wins, which is stupid to even be, you know, the media need to look at the bigger picture here. You know, you can't just have a witch hunt just because it's Halloween. You know, he's had a hard week. He had the Rashford stuff and it's Fulham away. And I knew it was going to be difficult. I mean, there were some United fans after the game saying, oh, well, they won, but they didn't play well. I was like, they ain't playing well with that team. That is just literally survival football. They grafted. They should have had a goal, which obviously you think was offside. But the Fulham had chances. We had chances. They fought to the end. They won the game. I'd take that. I actually said afterwards, I'd rather win like that than win 3-0 against a really bad Fulham side, because it's a tough place to go. And they've played for 90 minutes. They've played for the manager. They've played for the fans. Yeah. And fair play. And you know, I never expected a good result. It's survival football for United.
You mentioned the McTominay goal that was ruled offside. Give me your perspective on it then, because I do. I just think it's offside because I think as soon as Harry Maguire is in an offside position, as soon as that ball comes into the box, he has no business running after the ball. Yeah, if he doesn't, because he's offside, he shouldn't be running for the ball. So the defender, if Harry Maguire is not there, just clears that ball away.
Well, you can tell for a start how long they take on VAR. You can predict what the audio says, right? They'll have gone, cross comes in, Garnacho's onside, crosses it back to McTominay, he's onside. Yeah, happy to give the goal, happy to give the goal. And someone will have gone, hold on a minute, let's have a look at Maguire.
Yeah.
Oh, let's play it on. But he's offside from the... Is he into... Subjectively, I think he is interfering in play. Let's get the referee to come and have a look at it. And I'm like, it's like what you said about the Newcastle thing. If there's no VAR, that's a goal.
Yeah.
And we're all happy and we celebrate it. Like,
but nobody's going to say anything about it.
No one's going to say it. They've gone looking for it.
You'll say, yeah, that's cool. That's fine. That's fine. It's not the end of the world.
They've gone looking for it. And the same thing happened last week in the derby where no one thought it was a penalty. And then 2 minutes later, can you look at this? They're looking for stuff. And I think when you look for stuff, you're ruining it for the fans.
Yeah.
And of course, my other problem is Fulham against Man City a few weeks ago. And Kanji puts off the keeper.
Straight in front of him.
He's completely offside. And that's not offside. So again, they're looking for stuff and they're inconsistent. And that to me...
And what was it, 4.5 minutes? I think they spent four and a half minutes.
I think technically you're right that there is, they're going to be able to hide behind the book, but they're looking for it and they're inconsistent. And I've had enough of it.
What do you think about the Marcus Rashford situation? As a guy that's been in that world and understands how football works, obviously Marcus Rashford going out after the Man City derby defeat last weekend, do you think he had an injury, or do you think he would have been dropped?
100% he's been dropped. I think, look, it's really tough being at the height of your profession and trying to live the life of a professional footballer, but also have some life outside of it. Look, the party after the Man City game would have been booked a month in advance, 6 weeks in advance. Of course, in the cold light of day, you've got beat 3-0. It's been a shocking result, a shocking performance. Do you then want to be seen out enjoying your birthday party? The reality is, if you play for Man United or any of the top teams and you're an England international, no, you shouldn't. But he's a human being, it's his birthday. If he would have gone there and had nothing to drink, just had a nice time, I don't know whether he had anything to drink. It's just not the right thing to be seen.
Not.
I think Ten Hag seems to be really strong on the discipline, the timekeeping, and ultimately it's the perception of what Man United is.
Yeah, exactly.
And Man United can't afford to lose any game, but to lose the derby and then be seen to be out partying is really tough. But if you want to be paid the big bucks, you want to play for the big teams, you want to be an England international, you've got to have more about you.
Yeah.
And you've got to say, if you've spent X, Y, or Z to organise your party 6 weeks ago, but you've got beat 3-0 in the derby, I'm afraid all your mates can go, all your family can go, but you're not going.
It's the sacrifices, unfortunately.
And that's sacrifices been you have at to the make. Top of the tree.
Yeah. Also, Ten Hag had called them in the next day.
Yeah.
Impromptu because of the result.
And then if he's out till 2-3 in the morning or it's whatever, just, he turns up.
It's just naivety on his part. But I think he's not injured. I think Ten Hag's really trying to rule with an iron fist behind the scenes there. And the reality is, for a manager, when he starts ruling with an iron fist, you're not necessarily going to get everybody on side.
Do you know what his biggest mistake in all of this was, Marcus Rashford? Is booking his birthday party after the Man City game. Marcus, what are you doing, geez? You've got Luton next weekend, yeah? Just give it another week, right? Wait for that one. You'll probably go and pump them. Book it for that one, all right? Do not book it for the Man City game. Come on, mate. Everybody knows how that one's going to go. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yes, just crazy. Crazy.
Has Erik ten Hag bought himself a little bit of time as Manchester United manager then?
I think so, yeah. I think it's a big win from that point of view. It sort of just silences the media a little bit, silences the minority, which it is in the fan base, yeah, who want him to go. Like you say, some winnable games to come, international break, get some players back. I'm sure the pressure will be back on him again before Christmas, but for now, yeah.
Before we move on, quickly, Bruno Fernandes, should he be the Manchester United captain? Are we happy with him keeping the armband to the end of the season?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't really get... I sort of get what Roy Keane was saying as a former great Manchester United captain, but my issue is if you take it off him, a bit like taking the goalkeeper thing away, undermines Bruno, probably puts him in a bad position, you know, makes the manager look weak, and who do you give it to?
Yeah.
I mean, Maguire's already had it.
Can't he was
probably
it back to
yeah, you can't
give,
it,
give
to
it,
him.
It back to him.
And he's probably the next best one at the moment to give it to, and he's playing well without it. So I think you keep it with Bruno, and he's just won us the game at the last in the last minute. So, you know, best of the best.
Give it to Scott McTominay. No. McSauce.
The warrior,
mate.
Braveheart.
I'd give it to him all day long. No, I would. Honestly, let me just quickly just say about Bruno Fernandes, though. I loved it in the dying minutes of that game, just before we scored the goal. You could just see... I could see somebody that just wanted the ball. He was like, he's not the only one on the pitch, but he was the one that he wanted to make something happen. He wanted to get hold of it. He wanted to take his players on, play 1-2, and he wanted to get that shot off. And you could see that sort of, that urgency and that passion, and that's the bit that I really liked. I did like that. Right, let's talk about Man City then, okay? Steamrolling win, 6-1. But let's talk about this guy, Jeremy Doku, okay? So he's the youngest ever player to have 5 goal involvements in a single game. 21 years old. 4 assists, 1 goal. This is maybe a massive, massive question here, right? But could Jeremy Doku go on to be one of the best wingers in the world? Is that a massive statement that he does?
It's a massive statement, but we've spoke on the show a few weeks ago about Bellingham, what he's done at Real Madrid, playing for England. This guy's come on the scene and he looks like he's played in the Premier League for years.
Yep.
He's got all the attributes. Of course, you're going to put massive pressure on him by saying, can he do this, can he do that? Man City don't make many mistakes in the transfer market. He's a very, very good player, a young player. And you kind of see, if Pep trusts in you, then the world is your oyster,
yep,
because you're playing with very, very good players.
See, I know you all laugh at me, all right?
If I never
can,
laugh at you.
If we laughs, can flip this up, yeah, in 5 or 6 years' time, right, and he's winning Ballon d'Or, he's playing for Man City in the Champions League, World Cup for Belgium, doing all this kind of stuff, ripping it up, yeah? I agree with you, right? If you're 21 years old and Pep Guardiola is trusting you to play week in, week out in the Premier League, right, you have got to have something about you. You have to.
I reckon if I was playing number 10 for Man City against Bournemouth, you'd be sat here saying, I'll tell you what, he might be in his early 40s, but... In a couple of years, he might be the best number 10 in the world.
Can we clip this? Definitely clip this up.
The thing about Doku is, though, Watto's right, is that he's a player that's been around for a bit. I remember watching him for Belgium, wasn't it? And was it in the Euros, maybe, a couple of years ago? He's a player that's been around for a bit, and it's not like other people wouldn't have been aware of him.
No, yeah.
And Man City have gone and replaced Mahrez. And this is the thing. But I mean, look, I did have a yawn when you mentioned Man City, and I'm not being offensive. I think that's just a natural body reaction. They're so boringly good, and they're so boringly good at finding talent, and they're so boringly good at dominating. I mean, Haaland destroyed everybody's FPL at the weekend, didn't he? Comes off at half time. If you flick that on and you've been out for the afternoon shopping or something and you see, what, six goals and you go, oh, yes. And he's done nothing.
First of all, I can't believe you just said it's easy playing. Easy being man. If I was in that position, it would be easy. Come on.
However, I'm giving credit.
However, right, if Erling Haaland is injured and he has got a bit of a niggle, are Man City going to miss him? For example, Rodri was injured for what, 3 or 4 games?
Yeah.
Went on a little losing streak, didn't they? Do you think that same thing would happen if Haaland's going to be out for a few weeks?
No. I actually think you could put Danny Ings up front for Man City and they'd still win games. He could put you in goal and they'd still win games.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God.
They could
play him up front.
That's Do you reckon I could score a goal for Man City up front?
Yeah, I saw that finish last week.
It was decent.
It was very good.
Would get a chance. That's the reality.
A chance. Mate, yeah. I would back myself to score at least 10 goals if I'm playing up top for Man City.
I'd love...
No, but you edit with your eyes, you're a little bit like that.
I'd love it.
Have you seen my left foot? I've seen your left foot, but
your head is like...
Yeah, don't put it in the air. Keep it on the ground. But I tell you what, I'd be an experiment I'd love to see. If Pep, if you're willing, let Ben Foster play up front.
Why don't we...
Get home to Luton. I reckon he'd score
guaranteed.
Why don't we get the mannequins out and put a proper crossing and finishing session on and we'll work on it.
I will go through it. I will header anything as well, mate. I will just steamroll, power through. Get on the end of that. Save that little bad boy. Go on. Bournemouth, quickly.
He's coming out of retirement now. You see the passion rising up.
The passion.
This video with Joe Hart.
You seen my... Yeah,
have
you
seen...
I've seen it on my
YouTube channel. Can goalies score goals? Me and Joe Hart, we score goals.
All goalies think they can play up front, don't they?
Without doubt.
Without doubt.
Without doubt. Quickly, Bournemouth, should they be a little bit concerned about relegation? Because this win for Man City was just a little bit too easy, wasn't it?
The thing is, mate, the play for 30 minutes and it's 0-0. Yeah. But when you watch the game, they've got 10 players basically within 5 yards of their own 18-yard box. So, obviously, Edison's up on the halfway line. City are... I mean, Bournemouth can't get out their own half. But they just probe. They've gone there basically to try and keep it tight for as long as... But as soon as the first goal goes in, there's no plan B. Yeah. That's the problem you have when you play away at Man City. I think, obviously, with winning the weekend before, it were a free game for Bournemouth. You don't want to get beat 6, for sure. But they're hoping that the 3 promoted teams are going to be beneath them. That's their big chance this year.
Right, let's talk about West Ham, OK? Because it's a disappointing result for West Ham, losing 3-2 away at Brentford. But one of the main talking points about the game was Mikel Antonio coming under massive fire, under massive pressure, all because he does a podcast, all right? So he does a podcast for, I think it's BBC Sounds, with Callum Wilson, who, on the other hand, is getting no pelters, no pressure, nothing, because he's doing well for Newcastle. Newcastle are winning, but Mikel Antonio now hasn't scored in a while. He had an open goal almost that he kind of got in the way of Benrahma and put it wide. Watto, from your perspective, is doing podcasts on the side whilst you're a current player, is it a distraction? Is it a problem for him?
Well, look, I never got to that point in my career. If I look at it from a coaching or a managerial perspective, as long as it's not interfering with training times and how you're applying yourself to the training, then I have no problem with it. Football's a short-lived career. As you know now, he's thinking about opportunities further...
Yeah, after football.
After football. And there cannot be anything wrong with that. I know so many players that went to do university courses, psychological courses. That's in their own time, but it's not high profile. Or they go in and coach in the academy teams on a night, 2 or 3 nights a week. That's just not seen. Yeah. But because it's a podcast and he's out there, he's putting himself out there to be shot at. And in the world in which we live in, some people are going to be very critical of that. I cannot be critical of that because it's just a facet to get you into another stage of life.
Yeah, sure.
For sure, he's not doing the things on the football field on a Saturday afternoon, and that then will come to bite anybody. But it doesn't affect the guy who's doing an accountancy course. It doesn't affect the guy who's coaching the academy 3 nights a week. You're doing what's right for you for the next stage of your life and your career. And I think to be very critical of him, it's just the modern world in which we live. He's a good footballer and ultimately he's getting towards the end. So he has to be thinking of other avenues.
What's next?
Yeah.
But ultimately, whether people are listening or what, you're in that position. You were in that position with your vlog. You got a lot of stick for that as well. What impact does it have?
Listen, the vlogs are a bit different. The vlogs are directly kind of attached to the football and on the Saturday.
You got criticised.
The GoPro. And the, oh, of course I got criticised. I got so much criticised. It was fantastic when you won. But if you lost, it's like, don't you dare put that vlog out. But if you win, everybody wants it. Everybody wants to see it. When, with regards to the podcast, though, the podcast is... Mine's a little bit different to what Callum Wilson's and Mikel Antonio's is, because they're talking about what's going on in the Premier League. They're talking about certain players. I mean, he got into trouble a few weeks back, didn't he? Because he was talking about Richarlison. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he basically took the mick out of him a little bit, not scoring goals. Richarlison saw it, read about it, and he hit back with his own kind of like, who are you talking about? You can't talk about me like that. And I think when it's talking about what's going on in the Premier League and they're having opinions and their current serving Premier Leagues, I do think it kind of opens yourself up to a bit more criticism. I think for me, I'm doing podcasts with individuals. So if I'm doing a podcast with a Tom Heaton, for example, I'm talking to him about his career, about this, about that. We're not necessarily talking about what happened at the weekend, yeah? And I don't want his opinion.
Yeah, because he could tell you what's going on in the current.
Exactly,
yeah. He could tell you what he thinks about the Hayley leaving or something like that, which would be unprofessional.
Exactly, yeah. So it is a bit of a different podcast, but for me, I disagree with it, all of it. I think players are allowed and should be allowed to do this kind of stuff. Out in America, if you go to America and watch some of the basketball players or the NFL players, they've all got podcasts. They've all got their own YouTube channels. They go and talk live. They do streams. And they're talking about absolutely anything and everything. And the clubs, the league, everybody loves it. And they want that to happen.
If you're going to do it, I think, my opinion is, if you're going to do it, you've got to be Ronaldo. Because if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk. Well, the problem is, he's not walking the walk.
That's
the problem. Off,
that is the problem, yeah.
That's the only thing I think the difference is for you. When you were doing it, you showed the lifestyle of what you were doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you had the camera in the goal, but you showed the empathy with the coach driver. You showed the lads having the pre-match meal, evening meal. You showed what everything was like behind the scenes. And you weren't being critical of anybody who you're in the same league with,
yeah,
or
yeah.
You know what I mean? I think when you do a podcast and you're in the environment, I don't think you should be being critical of others at that level. Your podcast or video showed something behind the scenes which people hadn't seen, but you were never critical of anything or anybody.
Did you used to watch my vlogs?
Occasionally.
Oh, that's nice.
Only because I was worried about your diet.
What would you do if you were my what would you do if you were my goalie coach and you saw me with my GoPro in behind the goal every game?
It has no bearing on me.
I love this, Watto. Right, I want to talk about Sheffield United Wolves. VAR, yet again, stealing the show. Right, this is the bit I'm talking about then. Subjectiveness, OK? Was it a penalty in the very dying seconds of the game, Watto?
No chance.
Was it?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And yet again, somebody has sat there, looked at that and gone, yeah, I agree with that.
You know, the interesting thing about this is, though, because you've played the game at the highest level and I've just played the pub football and five-a-side football, but, like, I saw, I think it was Match of the Day, and they were saying, this is why we need ex-players in VAR, because you need to be able to play the game. And I thought it was a bit arrogant, really, because I've done that on a Saturday afternoon, amateur level at 15. You're in the penalty box, it's the last minute, you know he's going to try and put a tackle in, and you move your leg towards his foot, yep. And you go down. But even at that level, the referee would go, that's a dive. Like these referees just don't
get it.
Don't play five-a-side on a Wednesday night, you'll get it.
That's the hard bit for me. I see Gary O'Neill's interview after, and he's been in and seen the referee. He's tried to be as respectful as he can and be as calm as he can. And the referee has told him, watching the clip together, it's still a penalty. I've been in there as a member of staff. I've been in with the computer, and we're looking at this, and they will not ever turn around and say, well, no.
They've never admit to a mistake.
No, and that's the problem. He's gone. He's halfway down before the foot's just nibbling at him. And that's the thing. It's the last kick. Sheffield United have not had a win, have they? You know, they're going to try anything. And it's not wrong of what he did. It puts the referee in a position and he's made the decision, he's given a penalty. But surely they have to say, look, he's half down there. It's the last kick of the game. And because it's Wolves, actually, rightly or wrongly, they've had so many shit decisions against them, I didn't think they'd give the penalty.
If this was against Man City or an Arsenal or a Newcastle...
At 0-0.
Do you think that Sheffield United get that penalty?
Well, with VAR, you just don't know, do you?
No, but I don't think the ref gives it if it's against a big team.
No chance.
No chance.
Chance on this earth. The referee, if he would be watching that and think, if it's one of them big boys, yeah, I guarantee you he's thinking, there's no way I'm giving a penalty for that. I do not need that backlash.
But the scary thing is, like, Gary O'Neill's, he's played the game.
Yeah.
And for a referee to sit there and look in a quiet room and go, no, I'm telling you, that's still a penalty. This referee has never played football.
Yeah.
Like, it's so obvious to anybody that he's moved his leg.
Yeah, he's buying the foul.
Simulation.
He's buying it.
It's a yellow card at the end of the day.
This is where I want, like, the Premier League managers have got loads on. Premier League coaches have got loads on. But what we need is the manager and the coaches to be in with Howard Webb and these 10 referees or 12 referees and all the assistants when they're debriefing it, like we're discussing it here, and the vote then, or 8-1 said no penalty. Well, what's the one saying? What's the eight saying? Mm. So we know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And listen to me as a manager, a coach. We're dealing with you every week. Can that be a penalty?
I don't like rugby massively, but what I do love about rugby is the officiating.
The clarity.
This is the best league in the world with the most money. It's the most watched. On something like that, the tech's there because it's in rugby. Why can the referee not be, and why can the crowd, who matter the most in the ground, not be listening to him going, look, we're reviewing it now.
This Sheffield is what United we're
player,
for.
There might be some contact there, but we're looking at it. Yeah, he's moving his leg towards the Wolves player there. He's gone to do that to win the foul. I think it's simulation. I mean, what are they actually saying?
Well, actually, but even if he said, look, to be honest with you, it's soft, but it's touched him, you might have to come and have a look at it.
Yeah.
But just to hear the comms,
yeah.
So you can get a little steer on what they're feeling.
Howard Webb is trying to make this whole kind of like, well, look how open and honest we are. We're doing these horrible things with Michael Owen where we get to put it exactly how we want and nobody challenges
the good ones.
It's horrible, yeah, it's horrible. But he's not doing enough. He genuinely is not doing enough. Just open it up then. If you're going to open it up properly so that we can hear the communication, we can see what they're looking at, and then we can go, well, I see why he said that at least, or I see why he might have seen this
well,
at
least.
Well,
fans can then relate to the conversation and see, well, that's a genuine mistake you've made there. I can understand what the comms is, but at the minute, we've got no idea.
Do you know what? I never thought I'd say this, right, but I actually feel sorry for Wolverhampton Wanderers. As a player who has played for West Brom for the majority of my career, right, and I know Wolves fans hate me. It's absolutely fine. I actually feel sorry for them because three referees now that have officiated Wolves matches have made massive mistakes. They've been demoted to the Championship the next week. And Wolves are having a decent season. You know, Wolves are sort of like mid-table. We like the look of Wolves. They're a decent team. They could be so much higher.
The Champions League contenders with some decent referees.
Genuinely, they could be top eight if they would have had some of the results go their way that they should have had as well. Like I say, VAR, once again, kind of just getting in the way, making it the talking point. It's a shambles. Want to talk about Brighton. Can we wrap our heads around Brighton, lads, please? Because start of the season, they get off like an absolute steam train, flying all over the place, and now it seems like you just don't really know what you're going to get from water.
No, I think, and I'm sure the manager feels the same, because he makes five or six changes every game, changes the goalie, changes
the goalie every week.
Many players, and I don't think that really helps the momentum of a team, to be honest with you. I didn't expect them to get beat up at Everton because they're that good a team. But they've lost a little bit of that spark, for sure. And really, I mean, they're fortunate to get the equaliser, aren't they? I mean, very unlucky in terms of the deflection. I think if you went into the goalkeeping element of that, I think you'd be a little bit disappointed. Yep. You can't react a little bit quicker, even though it is obviously totally unexpected to come off Young's knee like that. But going back to Brighton, I think he's just trying to find a solution again because they've not got the fluidity and he's not got the trust of an 11 at the moment.
Yeah. Look at that for a stat, by the way. Everton had 17% possession in that first half and they were 1-0 up when they went in at the break. It's brilliant, isn't it? That is Sean Dyche all over. But do you know what? Listen, as an Everton fan, I'm sure sometimes it's a little bit frustrating when you're playing these sort of teams and you've got, 20-odd% possession? But you know you're always going to have a chance in the game. As long as you can keep in there, that's Sean Dyche all over, isn't it? As long as you can stay in there and keep it tight at the back, you know they'll always go and nick a horrible, horrible goal. So I think Sean Dyche, for me, is doing a fantastic job at Everton.
Yeah, I think they've got out of trouble, haven't they? I mean, they're not going to go down because of the teams that are already down there, and they have started to pick up some good results. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. They lost at home to Luton.
Yeah.
I mean, who does that? But no, I think he steadied the ship there, and Everton certainly need that, don't they?
Yes, they do. Right, guys, I want to talk about Burnley. Another disappointing result for them. Do you know what? I expected some big things from Burnley when they came up this season. They steamrolled the Championship last season, playing some fantastic football. Vinny Kompany sticking true to his guns. He's going to play this style of football. It's just not working out for them, is it?
Well, the results have been terrible, to be perfectly honest with you. They've had one win away at Luton. So
if we talk about who and what he's supposed to be, you know, you give me your verdict on whether you think he should still be in his job.
On Vinnie Kompany. Yeah, I think this is a tough one, you know. This is a real tough one because he's a man of great stature, isn't he, Vinnie Kompany? I think he's so well-respected in football in general. He'll obviously be absolutely loved and adored at Burnley. But at the end of the day, if you're kind of bottom of the league and you're losing week in, week out, and you're sticking to your guns and saying, no, we're going to do it this way, we're going to do it this way, the Premier League is such a massive difference from the Championship. And it's cool playing that way in the Championship when you've got the players and the ability to do that. But in the Premier League, there's going to be 12, 14 teams that are going to play the same style of football as what you're trying to do, but they're going to be better than you. They're going to be fitter. They're going to be stronger. They're going to be better technically. They're going to beat you. It's as simple as that. And then when you mix it up and play against the teams that are going to be more physical, they're just going to steamroll you as well. So at some point, you have to look at it and go, yeah, it's great that you want to play this philosophy and you want to play this style, but we might have to look at changing it a little bit. And if the manager's not willing to do it, maybe somebody above him is going to go, well, if that our manager's not willing to do it, we might have to start looking at employing somebody who is going to really do that. It'd be interesting to hear from the Burnley fans, to be fair, because I'm never really hearing any kind of, do you know what I mean? I never hear any rumours that Vinnie Kompany's under pressure. You hear it for Sheffield United, for Heckingbottom, but you don't ever really seem to hear it about Vinnie Kompany.
He's got a lot of money in the bank, hasn't he, I think, with the fans, but ultimately Burnley are not Luton. Luton, this is a dream. Yeah. Burnley were an established Premier League side under Dyche. They've gone down, they've come back. Are they happy to go down again? And I think that's where you've got to make a decision, because at the moment, they look like they're going to go down, whereas somebody might be able to come in and keep them up.
Yeah, Burnley fans, can you get in the comments down below, please? I want to know this. I want to know, kind of gauge the feeling of the Burnley fan base and see if they're happy with how it's going at the minute.
Well, that will be my take on it. Look, they've had Sean Dyche. We've just talked about him at Everton. And ultimately, Everton might want to play this dynamic brand of football, but ultimately they want to still be in the Premier League and be an established Premier League team. Yes, Dyche took the majority of the Burnley team and the games the year they got relegated. But Vinnie Kompany's playing attractive football, lovely football, but do the Burnley fans want to go back to an Allardyce, a Dyche-type model to stay in the league, or are they happy to keep playing attractive football, not score a goal, and ultimately this year they might go down without a whimper unless they change? But because at the minute it's exciting brand of football, but ultimately nobody wants to be associated with losing football.
No, week in, week out, week in, week out. It's good to see Aberici Eze back in the Crystal Palace team, getting an assist. I want to see some big things from this guy because I really like him. I want to see him back in the England team and absolutely ripping off. Fantastic win for Palace, by the way, up to 10th in the Premier League. They're another team who are kind of, you just know they're going to be all right, aren't they? They're the kind of teams who can beat your Arsenals, they can beat a Man United and then go and lose to whoever next week. But you know eventually they're going to be all right, aren't they?
Palace with Roy in charge.
Go on, Roy.
Always be difficult to beat. And actually, I think they've got some exciting offensive players.
Yeah.
And they're always going to have enough. And, you know, ultimately, Burnley often puff, but Palace made light work of it, really.
Experienced Premier League side that will just be mid-table.
Yeah, that'll do, won't it? A lot of teams, you know, it's a nice place to be sometimes for a lot of teams.
Can't be the top.
This is a world-class episode, by the way, lads. Honestly, I think, lads, genuinely, I think this might be up there as one of the best.
Well, you've got another good section coming up now, because I'm going to say something very controversial about Luton-Liverpool.
Bring it on.
I tell you what, it's not VAR like the Newcastle game, and it's not incompetence, but I think they made a massive call on the Luton goal.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, you see it in training, three attackers against two, you score every time. You see it on a Saturday afternoon, they always mess it up. Luton's breakaway, the way they did that was perfection.
It was fantastic, it was
a lovely goal.
It?
Yeah. But we've seen them handballs given.
Yes.
And I was like, I think they've got it right, because you can't, that's such a fantasy goal for Luton. If they go, ooh, no goal, and it's a penalty to Liverpool, I think they've got problems. I think the police at Luton are getting pulled in for a riot. But actually, when you watch it, I think it was a penalty.
Probably.
I think it was. Barkley's gone for it. His hands have gone like that. And Van Dijk's heading it towards goal, and it's hit him there.
Yeah.
We've seen him given this season.
The fact his arms are out is the reason why it should. But
I think they should be given.
I don't think it's a penalty because of being a footballer, and you will probably say the same. And back in the day, you would say the same. The way that you see penalties given nowadays, I would not have been surprised if he blew up for a penalty.
Well, I think if you want the consistency, and we saw it a week before last where they gave three like that on the Saturday.
Yeah.
I can't remember the three incidents. But I think if we want consistency with handball, then you have to give that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because
yeah.
otherwise you're getting too subjective with everyone, and that's when fans get consistent. But I'm glad he didn't give it, yeah, because it was too. A great goal for Luton. But I do look at it and go,
ooh. Oh, yeah, I'm holding my breath when you see there's a check. But it were actually nice because Liverpool score so many goals on the counter-attack against teams I've been involved with, and you see it, and it's a thing of beauty. But for Luton to get that counter-attack and get it absolutely bob on, because obviously Alisson made a couple of big saves, and he's normally out quick for the block there, but it was just perfection. And look, for football, you don't want it coming back and going a penalty at the other end.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's what ruins it, for sure. But ultimately, a massive point for Luton. But come the end of the season, I guarantee they'll be thinking that's 2 points probably cost us.
Having said that, though, that Nunez miss.
Oh,
I mean, I reckon if he did that 10 times, he'd score it 10 times.
The thing is, he's done a few of them this season, you know.
It's got to be a concentration thing, hasn't it? It's got to be.
I was listening to Jurgen Klopp talk on the radio, actually, before the game, and they were asking him about the ceiling of Darwin Nunez. How high can he possibly go? And he said, you should see him around the training ground. Like, he's incredible. Like, he's always in a good mood. He's always happy. He's flying around. He's scoring goals right, left and centre. I did an interview with James Milne. I said, who's one of the surprise players at Liverpool? And he said, Darwin Nunez. He's incredible. You should see him. He's like a rough diamond. He's still, like, it's all gonna sort of, like, click soon, and he's just going to smash it. But he keeps doing things like this. Like the goal he scored in the Carabao Cup in the week. Did you see it? Yeah. His touch was horrific.
Horrendous, yeah.
Absolutely horrendous. And then he gets it onto his right foot and just drills the life out of it.
Did you see the one in the first half? He starts over on the left back. He runs and then goes like that in behind.
Yeah.
Ball from Trent. Takes it down with his chest. He's done all the hard work and then volleys it, and I think it's the bar or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I really do agree that he's a rough diamond. I really rate him. I wanted him to come to United, but some of his misses, I think it might be a psychological thing. It's like, just focus on that final bit, because he's almost thinking he scored.
Before he scored?
Yeah.
Are we in agreement, though, that we think there's something there?
Oh, yeah.
More than something there?
Mate, I think there's more than something there. And if it actually ever gets to the point where it is clicking, then Liverpool know they've got a phenomenal player, you know?
Yeah.
But they're just waiting for it as much as the fans and everybody else is.
I tell you what, it was harsh on Luton, but what did you think about the Diaz thing? Because I tell you what, we talk about footballers and the strain of being a footballer and all, you know, I'm getting a bit of abuse on Twitter, etc. This is a lad whose dad's been kidnapped and he might not, you know, doesn't know what's going to happen to him. Playing football, scoring a goal like that. I mean, I'm no Liverpool fan, but at the end of the day, I think that takes a lot of, you know, just to be able to put the shirt on and play. When that's going on, I certainly wouldn't be able to do that.
That's incredible. If you've got this is the beauty of knowing the person before the player. And if you know you've got a player like Luis Diaz, who is an unbelievable person, mentally very strong, just gets on with his job. That for me is fantastic. The fact that Jurgen Klopp can even think of picking him into the team. He's obviously had many conversations with Luis Diaz every single day. How are you, mate? How's it getting on? What's happening? Do you want to be in the squad at the weekend? For Luis Diaz, he probably's gone, I want to be in the squad. I want a distraction from it all. Yeah. I want to be able to do that. And to be able to trust that as Jurgen Klopp, you must go, oh, what a guy. Mm. What a guy. So to see him score that goal, and listen, I'm absolutely gutted for Luton, because I'd love to have seen them win that game. It's a massive, massive coupon buster. We were all on our group chat, weren't we, last night, lads? And even with, I said, there's going to be about 10 minutes at a time added on. There was 8 in the end. And I said, Liverpool will probably go and win this 2-1 anyway. They went and scored that goal, and they still had 3 or 4 minutes, in fairness to them. But it was a fantastic game, a nice little end to the weekend's Premier League football. Actually, it's not the end of the weekend's Premier League football. Do you know why? Because there's a Monday night football game, lads.
There's
a Monday night football game.
This
should have been a Sunday afternoon, but you know what? I'm happy that it's on tonight because I know that I'm going to go plot up. I'm going to light my candles, right? I'm going to get some din-dins. I'm going to have a nice little beer.
You got an open fire?
No, I haven't got an open fire, no. But we haven't all got your money, all right?
I've got that much. He's got more than me. You got an open fire?
Yeah.
He's got an open fire.
Look at this.
Tom, you've got one, haven't you? Yeah. Tom's got one. My God. Jamie's not. He's got a candle.
It's not much to sing about in a talk two down, mate, but it's just what we have, isn't it?
Two down my ass. Chelsea Spurs tonight. We can do a little prediction at the end, but I just want to talk about Spurs for a minute, right? Because everybody's been buzzing with this. Everybody's talking about Ange and this and that. But if you're a Spurs supporter right now, rightfully so as well, you should be absolutely buzzing with what's going on in York Football Club, wouldn't you?
I hope they do win tonight, because it's been Man City. Oh, I'm going to yawn again. It's Man City's weekend, isn't it?
Yeah.
Liverpool have lost. Arsenal have lost. Villa lost. So we need Spurs to win tonight. Otherwise, City
put the pressure
on that. But I reckon it'd be real. I think I went with the draw, didn't I? When we did win, lose or draw. I think I think it'd be close. But if Spurs do win it, you know, it's a massive statement.
How do you see it going tonight, Water?
I think it'll be an emotional night for Spurs fans as well, because Pochettino's coming back. And, you know, it'll be the first time he's been back. And he did unbelievable things for the football club, didn't he? You know, they got to the Champions League final and things like that. So for him, it'll be an emotional night. And I think he'll get his Chelsea team revved up. I think Spurs are a better team than Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think what Ange has done, and we talk about the Ange ball all the time, I want him to win because I want him to make the title race as it should be. I think if Spurs can take the emotion out of Pochettino coming back, I think they should win the game and win the game comfortably, to be honest with you, the way they're playing football.
I've got a question for you.
Go on.
As a Spurs fan, do you agree if there's a bit of booing and stuff for Poch today?
No, I don't like that. I don't like that. It's the same with Declan Rice last week. I disagree with it completely. I think somebody who's been a manager at your football club for such a long time did such good things with them as well. I know he didn't win anything, but he did such good things with Spurs. It would be nice to see them just give him a little ripple, a little round of applause, and then it's like, right, let's just crack on with the game and go and win this one. If you had to pick one of the two to manage your football team, who are you picking, Big Ange or Mauricio?
Well, I didn't want Poch at Man United, so I'm going to go Big Ange.
Oh, Watto?
You got him.
That's a yeah.
This is a toughie, this is.
I've never spoke to Ange, so I've not got that feel for him, but I've spoke to people who have worked with him and are working with him now, and he's supposed to be unbelievable. I've had the pleasure, if you like, to speak a lot with Pochettino.
Why do I get the sense he's going to sit on the fence here?
No, I'm not.
I can't break it up.
No, I'm not, because I've never sat on the fence in my entire life.
Right.
I backed you time and time again when managers wanted to drop you. So let's
even if he's wrong, he won't sit on the fence. No.
So because I don't know Ange, and I've just got a little bit more empathy with Pochettino, I would go with Pochettino.
Ooh, I'm gonna go with Big Ange.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Big Ange. I love it. I love that kind of. I love watching him. If you had Big Ange at Man United, he would be able to do a bit of Man United, you know? He would. He would not give a toss about these players doing this and that. If you're a dickhead, he'll go, get out of my team, you're a dickhead. Done. See you later. I don't care how much it costs me or the club or whatever. You're done. I'll get somebody in that's going to run his heart out for me.
It's early days, but if he does continue to do well, you've got to look at the rest of the Europe and go, why has no one else picked up on this manager? And let's not forget, he wasn't Spurs' first choice either. Spurs had a couple of others lined up before they went with him, so...
This is going to be a good game tonight, by the way. If Spurs win, they go back to the top of the league, 2 points clear of Man City. And if Chelsea lose, they will stay in 13th position. Oh, my God. So if Chelsea loses tonight, 11 games played, they're in 13th position.
And this is funny as well, isn't it? Because all last week, it's pressure on Ten Hag, who's one win away from, you know, 50 wins, etc.
Yeah.
But Chelsea and Poch, £1 billion spent, no pressure at all from the media. It helps being a media darling.
It does, it does. Right, everybody, this has been my favourite episode I've ever done on the Football Fill-In, and it's going to get even better right now because we have got the world-famous Football Fill-In quiz. I'm on 3 points. Mark's on 3 points. Watto is brutal at this, and he's only got 1 point, and I'm going to take the lead today. I'm going to be out there 4-3 up against this guy here. The quiz. Right, quiz time. We have got the world-famous Nervous Ginge. You're going to bring your A game today, though, aren't you, mate?
I'm shaking a little.
I know.
I'm nervous, yeah.
Stop looking nervous, all right?
Yeah.
Don't be nervous.
Are you ready for today, though?
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah? Here we go. 10 questions. Little fill-in quiz. Question one. Which Hull City manager gave a half-time team
Phil Brown.
Talk on the pitch?
Bruni!
Phil Brown.
Bad question, though.
No, he hasn't had that question before.
I was going to say Phil Parkinson. I knew it, but I said Phil Parkinson. Man.
Question two, career path. I have played for Leicester City, MK Dons loan, Barnsley loan, West Brom loan, Newcastle.
Harvey Barnes.
Correct.
Good shout.
That's a good one. One, nil. Question three, can you name a player who has worn the number 9 shirt for Spurs in the Premier League?
Teddy Sheringham?
No.
No.
Sergei Rebrov?
Sergei Rebrov? No.
Oh!
Number 9? I know who it is. I know who it is.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Anderton?
Correct. Anderton.
Is that his third name? Outrageous, by the way.
So you've got Darren Anderton, Les Ferdinand, Frederick Canute?
Freddie Canute, come on.
What about Pavlyuchenko? That's the name I was trying to get at.
Rezanak, Dimitar Berbatov, Roman Pavlichenko, Roberto Soldado, Vincent Janssen, Gareth Bale and Richarlison.
Did well with Anderton.
He wore number 14, he did. 11. He wore number 11 at Spurs.
Rebrov, he said.
Sergei Rebrov.
There we go. 1-1-1. All square. Question 4. Who is the highest German scorer in Premier
Klinsmann.
League history? No, he is third.
Rosler.
No.
Uwe Rosler? That's the worst answer ever.
No, he scored a lot of goals.
He's not in the top three, unfortunately.
He's buying time here. Buying time.
Buying time. You asked a question about 3 seconds ago.
I know his plan. No, just it's ridicule me and buy yourself some stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably think about it.
You don't know anything, all right?
Klinsmann is third with 29 goals.
Three.
No.
Not yet.
What do you mean not
the
yet?
The highest German goal scorer in the Premier League.
This is tough.
Five.
No, what do you
yes,
mean?
Yes, Jay, no, yeah. Let him be in
Such
charge.
A douchebag, three. You are.
No, let him be in charge.
Two.
Didi Hamann.
No.
No.
It's not Havertz.
No. It is Ilkay Gundogan.
Oh, you forget he's German.
Goals.
You forget he's German.
I tell you what, I bet if you look at Rosler, he did score some Premier League goals. 29. Shut up and sit down.
How many did Klinsmann have?
29 as well.
Oh, my gosh.
That was in one season.
True that. So effectively, Rosler was joint third.
Who did Brendan Rodgers manage before joining Liverpool?
Swansea.
Leicester.
Correct. Swansea's the correct answer.
What do you look at me like that for? Honestly, the look there, mate, it's terrible. Let me feel.
What an intelligence.
I would hear before. I would hear before.
Not a career path, bollocks. That's intelligence, that is.
Watto has taken the lead.
Thank you, Jay.
Short lived.
Question 6. What is the nickname of Juventus?
Old lady.
Old lady.
The old lady. Ah! Correct answer.
Is it not the Azzurri?
No.
No, it's Italy.
They're called the old lady because it's a club where black and white, and that's resembled as old lady attire, apparently.
That's
so,
it.
There we go.
Who got the answer?
Me. Mark. Yeah. Two. Old lady one.
Yeah.
Question 7. Which two countries hosted 2002 World Cup?
Japan and Korea. South Korea.
Correct. Correct, Mark.
How does he know
three,
that?
I don't know, mate.
How does he? Because
I watched it.
Yeah.
I was one.
You were probably there, weren't you? No, didn't get the call up.
Watching it around his ass.
I'd laugh if you had been called up and you didn't get the answer. I can't remember where I was. Just did a hotel 24/7. It's boring. Didn't like playing for England.
It was boring. Yeah, we were on the lash, weren't we?
Good summer then.
Yeah. Question 8. The 2022 World Cup was held in Qatar. Name the only other side to host the tournament without previously competing in the competition.
South Africa.
Correct.
Oh, this is pathetic.
That is really good. That is knowledge.
It's a good answer, yeah.
2010 very World Cup.
It's just coming back. I like Celine Dion.
It's all coming back. It's all coming back to me now.
Monotone there, what?
Yeah. We'd be a good barbecue today.
Yeah.
Triple.
Oh, coming back to quartet, me now,
Jamie in.
Yeah.
Baritone.
So basically, one having a 4-3.
No, 4-2-1, and there's two questions left, so
come
what
on,
can
Motto.
Tie.
Come on, Motto.
A tiebreaker.
Come on, Motto.
Question 9. In the Kepa Arrizabalaga incident where he refused to be subbed off, who was the manager?
Caballero. Oh, no.
Who was the manager?
Sarri.
Sarri was the correct
just
answer.
It for me. Thanks, mate.
Oh, what have I done? What have I done?
I thought you were going to say we were the sub-goalie.
No, I did.
Sorry.
Well,
I've got that.
Sorry, what, I've killed you.
No, I should have waited, shouldn't I? I knew the manager. I could see the scenario. I thought you were going to go off track
anyway,
a bit.
So you may as well have
got is it Maurizio Sarri? Michel, what's it?
Maurizio Sarri.
Yeah. 4-2-2.
We've killed it.
That was in 2009.
I just don't want to come last. I won't lie, I just don't want to come last.
All right, mate.
Question 10.
Question 10. Timu Pukki plays for which national team?
Finland.
Yeah, that was Ben.
Yes, it was, Ben. Yes, it was, Watto. You came last again.
Mate, I haven't been laughing at you. You've hardly got on the board last few times I've been
here. At the end of the day, if you come second or you come third, you still
Still last, huh?
Yeah. And that's it. That is the end of the quiz.
Any tiebreakers?
I have two questions left. I've got one question go, and then also got the question.
Let's just do them for fun. Let's just do them for fun.
Yeah, for fun, yeah?
Do them for the community.
I found a rhythm now. I feel like
as Mark won, is that?
Yeah, Mark's won.
Give him the crown. There we go. Question 11. Which, so staying on the Finnish vibe, Which Finnish defender made over 300 Hippier. Appearances for Liverpool between 1999 and 2009?
It don't count now, though, does Hippier.
It? No. Just well, knowledge. No, technically still weak.
Jari Litmanen, he was Finnish, wasn't he?
He didn't play in defence, though.
He's Finnish.
Yeah. He's not Finnish.
Is he finished?
Question 12. What club did Gary Lineker play for after Leicester City?
Everton.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
What?
He could have won that quiz.
Could have, would have, should have, couldn't have.
It would have been a draw between
you. He was on fire there.
Yeah, he was when it didn't matter and it didn't count.
When the pressure's
yeah.
on.
That's the
it's
only
like
problem.
Training, isn't it? It's like doing it, training.
I didn't really officially come last.
You did, because the official thing
no,
you did.
No. You said we'd do it, and it's not ever for fun. It always matters.
It does matter, don't it? Yeah, it does. Lads, thank you so much for today. You were incredible as well, Jamie. We will see you all next week for the football fill-in.